Like many of you, I imagine, I've been watching the events in Ukraine unfold over the past week. Am I the only one here? No? I didn't think so. I wrote an article in Roots and Sprouts for March talking a bit about this, how the invasion of Ukraine by Russia has hit me hard, surprisingly. I didn't think it would. And it's not because I have any Ukrainian ancestry at all. I hardly know any Ukrainians. Went to school with a girl who's from Ukraine. That's all I can think about at the moment. And I discovered that there are a few people that are from Ukraine that I didn't know about in the last week. So it's not that I have any immediate connection to the Ukraine. It's just that I, as I mentioned in the article, really don't like bullying. I really hate bullying. And Russia versus Ukraine seems to be the ultimate in bullying. One country that's bigger than the other that just goes in and does what it wants without any real serious justification, without really any serious reason other than it can do so. And you look at the violence, the destruction in human lives and property and beautiful architecture. And it seems so wasteful in so many ways. It's not the first time in history that this has happened, of course. Great powers have dominated their neighbors since the beginning of time. Julius Caesar went into Gaul, into modern France, and he conquered a civilization. And the estimates today are that 1 million people died over the 10 years that he was involved in conquering this people. All for the sake of glory and political advancement on his part. Rome crushed many peoples along the way to world domination. The Mongols did it 1,000 years later. The 50 years or so between Genghis Khan and his grandson Kublai Khan, it's estimated that 80 million people died at the hands of the Mongols. 80 million people. At the time, the world population is estimated at 800 million. That means 1/10 of the world was killed by the Mongols. Think about that. Resistance to any form to the Mongols was met with absolute and brutal force. The Aztecs did it in the New World to the peoples of Mexico. The Turks did it. The British have done it. The Americans have done it. And now the Russians are doing it. And let's be honest, we have done it in Canada too. Seems to be part of the human condition, doesn't it? To use one's positional advantage against others, to use other people's pain and suffering for personal advancement. Bullying happens at all levels of society, from nations all the way down to the local playground. Some of the worst forms of bullying today are found online. It's not even direct in-person bullying anymore. Some of the worst forms of personal torment today occur with the bullying that happens on social media. At least in the old days, a person who was bullied could get away from it when they came home. Now there's no safe place from it. Like many people, I have been moved deeply by the Ukrainian people. They have stood up to the bully. They've stood up to the bully. That's no mean feat, you know. They didn't back down. They could have backed down. They could have made a deal with Putin. They could have given up their right to decide for themselves who they wanted to be friends with, who they wanted to align with. They could have sold out their freedom for security. It would have been a logical decision, an understandable one, if they had come to an agreement with Putin. They chose to resist and fight if necessary, dig in for the long term, if required. President Zelensky has become a hero to the world. He's become a hero to the world. He's led his people with courage and conviction. And it's been inspiring for me, at least, to watch him lead his people. He was offered a chance right at the beginning of the invasion by the Americans to get out of Kiev. Just get him out. They would have airlifted him out. He could have set up a government in exile. He decided instead to stay and fight with his people at considerable personal risk. He inspired not only his own people, but he inspired the world. Now, I'm reminded in all this, again, of Carl Jung's famous observation. He said this: there are two types of suffering in life. There is the legitimate suffering that comes to us as fragile, frail human beings. And then there's all the neurotic suffering we go through in order to avoid our legitimate suffering of being fragile, frail human beings. You get to choose. I get to choose. Are we going to choose legitimate suffering, or are we going to choose our neurotic suffering? Jung's insight was that avoiding our legitimate suffering does not lead to the absence of suffering in life. It just displaces it. In fact, Jung observed that it actually leads to more suffering. If we avoid our legitimate suffering, it will lead us into the world of neuroses, and the neurotic suffering will continue to pile up on top of us over and over. It will create a deeper and deeper hole. Our neurosis, that means our illnesses, our mental, psychological, and even physical illnesses, will press us down further and further into the pit. Our neurotic suffering will become an oppressive force in our lives. That phone call you've needed to make, but you've been putting off for a long time. The doctor's appointment you need to go to, but you've been avoiding. Maybe you've gotten a written job evaluation or an essay grade that you simply chosen not to look at. Maybe there's an important conversation you need to have with someone that you've been putting off, you've been delaying. The variation on this theme is almost infinite. It all amounts to the same thing, though: avoidance. We avoid what rightly belongs to us, what rightly is part of us as frail, fragile creatures. For better or for worse, it belongs to us. By substituting something in its place that doesn't belong to us, that substitution just makes our journey through life that much harder. Now, Jung didn't come up with this idea on his own. He learned it from Jesus. He learned it from his Christian roots, his upbringing. His father was a Reformed pastor. He had several uncles who were Reformed pastors. I don't know Jung's personal religious beliefs in detail. I think he was intentionally a bit vague about it all, but his Christian education, his Christian upbringing influenced everything he did. It shaped his ideas. Jesus said to a crowd, "If you want to become my followers, let you deny yourselves and take up your cross and follow me." What does it mean to take up our cross? Well, I think it means to take up our legitimate suffering. The suffering that comes from your frail, fragile, even at times precarious existence. Don't run from it, Jesus says. Don't hide from it. Don't be intimidated by your fragility and vulnerability. Lean into it. Embrace it. Pick it up and follow me. And that is why I think the world admires and celebrates Zelensky and the Ukrainian people. They picked up their cross. They didn't run away from the fight. They could have. Maybe they should have. Yes, some Ukrainians have left the country, but more have stayed and dug in. Did you know last year Zelensky had a 25% approval rating? 25%. He was actually despised by the majority of Ukrainians. His chances of re-election as president were pretty much nil, zero. And now his approval rating is at 90% and beyond. Why? Because people deep down want the courage. They want the courage to meet the challenges of their legitimate suffering. We need someone to show us the way to do it. I think most of us are tired of running away from the challenges of life. We're tired of backing down from the bully whatever the bully is. And remember, a bully can be a person, but it could be a situation, or it could be a problem, some challenge in life. I think all of us are tired, many of us at least, are tired of running away from the challenges of life. Now, when you stand up to a bully, it can hurt. When you stand up to a bully, it can hurt a lot, a real great deal. When you confront a difficult situation, it can smart, it can sting. That's why it's so hard. That's why it's such a challenge to do. But let me tell you something. Running away from the bully, that hurts too. It hurts in a deeper way. I've done it enough times to know that. I've decided at times in life to turn away from my legitimate suffering, right? I've many times lacked the courage of the moment to meet the test. Whatever it might be, I've chosen to withdraw and avoid. And that leads to a certain kind of disappointment, a kind of shame. It's depressing, actually. It's the shame of that comes from knowing that I failed myself. I failed my best self. And that's the worst kind of suffering that I know of. There was an interesting article online in Political that I found about a woman named Katharina. Should have a picture of her there. There she is. 26-year-old young woman. She and her boyfriend decided not to leave Kiev when the war started, which I think that's a pretty courageous act right there. Then the missile started to fly off, and that scared them a lot, and they would run down to the air raid sirens when they went off into the air raid shelter. But now they don't go to the air raid shelter anymore. She said they're tired of being afraid. Her and her boyfriend, they're just tired of being afraid. They're tired of being afraid. No more being afraid, she said. The prophet Elijah was on the run for a time in his life. A death sentence had been placed on him by the king of Israel, Ahab, and his wife Jezebel. Two great bullies were on his heels, and he chose to run. He was consumed by fear. He was constantly afraid to the point of exhaustion. And he came to a place where he could go no further. And he was literally spent, lying on the ground. Just let me die, God, and get this over with. Scripture says that at that very moment, the angel of God touched him and said, "Get up and eat." Don't underestimate these ordinary moments. We sometimes think that God will speak to us, and when God does speak to us, it'll be something remarkable, a vision perhaps, or even a miracle. Yet Elijah was given a very ordinary task to do by God. We're looking for the great courageous act that will signal our turn in life, will signal our willingness to meet the challenges of our frailty and fragility, to meet the challenges of our legitimate suffering. We're looking for some kind of great sign from God that we've made the turn, but the nudge we are often given by God is found in the simple things like get up, get out of bed, eat. When we get overwhelmed in life, it's easy to let these ordinary things go. When we are deeply afraid or depressed, the simple things become hard. The basic things become difficult, at times impossible. When we are tortured with fear and doubt, in those moments, God often begins by inviting us to do something very ordinary. It's so ordinary that it's easy to miss the significance of it. Something like get up and eat, or in Katharina's case, the invitation was simply to stay. Don't be afraid to take that first step when God speaks. Don't be afraid to pull back the covers. Don't be afraid to put the fork to your mouth. God is in it. That's the whole point of the Deuteronomy passage. God is with you. Wherever you are on the journey, whatever you are up to in the moment, God is with you. God goes before you. The Lord will never leave you. Wherever you find yourself, God will never forsake you. Whatever you're up to, whatever circumstances you find yourself in. And that means we don't need to be afraid anymore. We don't need to be afraid. That's the invitation in Deuteronomy. No more being afraid. Of course, it's not a promise from God that nothing bad's going to happen to us. That's not the promise God gives to us. Katharina's decision to run, to not run anymore, to not be afraid and not to run anymore, is not a promise that a missile will not hit her apartment. It's not a promise that she won't be killed or seriously injured. It's not a promise her boyfriend won't be killed or seriously injured as well. It's confronting our basic existential challenges in life, like our bodies being so frail and fragile, so vulnerable, like the fragility of our relationships with each other, like the inevitable places of conflict that arise in life between people. That's just part of the legitimate suffering that comes to us as human beings. It's the territory of being human. And God will not take that opportunity away from us. The promise that God gives to us is that he is with us in it all. And that God will see us through to the other side. Whatever happens in this world, whatever happens to us in this rough and tumble world that we live in, and we know it can be rough and tumble at times, it's certainly not for the faint-hearted. This life we've been given is not for the faint-hearted. We don't need to flinch anymore. We don't need to run away anymore. When the bully comes, whatever or whoever it is, we don't need to step away anymore. We don't need to be so afraid anymore. God is with us. God's with you. God's with me. We're not alone. And there's a mantra for the United Church is that we are not alone. Thanks be to God. That's the end of our creed. And there is nothing in the world, this world, that can get in between God's love for us and ourselves. There's nothing the world can do to us that can put us beyond God's power, God's love. There's nothing in all of creation, Paul tells us, that can get in the way of this love. So we don't need to be afraid anymore. But if we don't trust God with our lives, well, then we don't learn about and we don't come to know about this love. Jesus tells us, actually, that the key to life is to learn how to lean into our frailty, not to lean away from it or to run from it, but to lean into it, to learn how to embrace our somewhat delicate nature, not to flinch away, but to move boldly towards it, maybe even embrace it. What's the point of trying to hold on to something that is in the end so transient anyway? You try to hold on to it, you try to protect it, but you'll end up losing it anyway. Back in the summer, Sally and I came across a set of 4 mugs. I got a picture up there for you of them. Thank you. That depict the artwork of Lauren Harris, one of the group of 7. I love these mugs. They're so beautiful. Sadly, one of them got knocked off the counter last week. Shattered. It broke my heart for a moment. I thought in that time that we should have kept these mugs hidden away, the back part of the cupboard, right? Protect them from damage and destruction. What would be the point of that, really, when you think about it? What's the point of having beautiful mugs if you never use them? Because you're too afraid that something bad is going to happen to them. You've already lost the battle at that point. Essentially, you've already lost the mugs by hiding them away. Jesus said, "For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life?" You know, I was reading an article about Putin. He's got this special guard detachment around him that are around him 24/7. He's got all these special police officers around him all the time that test his food and to check out where he's going to go. And nobody comes to him without having to go through this guard, this shield around him. And I'm thinking to myself, who wants to live like that? That's what a life without love looks like. You have to be afraid of everyone and everything. What's the point of us hiding away our mortality, our vulnerability, trying to hold on to something so transient only guarantees, Jesus says, that we're going to lose it anyway? It's like putting it away in the cupboard, putting our mortality in the cupboard. Our life is consumed with protecting it, protecting our mortality from any injury or destruction. What will that take? Well, it will take a life of neurotic suffering to pull off. Jesus invites us to take up our cross, our legitimate suffering, as mortal beings, as frail, fragile creatures, and follow him. Follow him on the journey. For the journey, he tells us, leads the way to life, to eternal life. The only way to walk this path, and there is only one way to walk this path, is with love. Only love can keep us from returning to fear. The German author Hermann Hesse once said, "You know quite well deep within you that there is only a single magic, a single power, a single salvation, and that is called love. Well then, love your suffering. Do not resist it. Do not flee from it. It is your aversion that hurts, nothing else." Is it possible to love our frail and fragile nature? What do you suppose? Is it possible to love the legitimate suffering that rises out of being so frail and fragile? So frail and fragile. Is it possible? Jesus did. He didn't turn away when the journey became hard. He went all the way with it. He picked up his cross. Jesus picked up his cross and went right to the end with it and then through it. God saw him to the end, but the end turned out not to be an end at all, but a beginning. And God will see you and me to the end. There's a whole world waiting, Jesus tells us, on the other side of the cross for us. It's waiting for us today. We don't have to die to see it. It's waiting for us right now. In that world, we don't have to be afraid anymore, because we will know that God is with us completely, totally. Our journey on the path of the cross, when we pick up our cross and follow after Jesus, can often begin with a simple command. Something like, get up and eat. Or get out of bed. Stand up. Or simply stay.